Just bring your body and your mind back, and so that you can be here. And I will invite three Sada Bell. That's our normal way of starting this class. And you are invited to relax your body and your mind and take a few deep breaths so that your body and your mind can be come together. Connection. So, dear friends, today is January 18, 2011, and this is our regular Tuesday night class. And my wish is to have you learn and sometimes look back to your note. And contemplate, see what you, what point that strike you. And sometimes one Dharma talk is the whole Dharma talk. Just one or two points will be striking you. Not everything is because it depends what you need. It's like when you go to a party, there is a lot of food on the table, but not you're not going to eat all the food. You have to be, if you are the meat eater, then you'll be consuming them all. But if you are a moderate eater, then you'll be selective. Yeah. And I think in this life, you have to be very selective in your way of life and selective in your practice. Because the teaching of the Buddha, he teaches in according to our own weakness, our own illness. So each of us have different weaknesses for each individual. So the teaching of the Buddha is to antidote, to give some antidote to that kind of weakness or illness in us. Some it might be opposed to our thinking, you know, but it's fit for other. It's the same thing. Some food on the table you take is be allergic to you, but not for other. It's the same thing as teaching is like that too. So we have to be selective in our practice, because that's why we have Pure Land practice. We have meditations practice. We have in Buddhism we have the one of the school we call precept school. You know, mostly amongst the people who just focus on elaborating and on the precept. So we have many different schools in Buddhism, and we call a school of Dharma, Tong Yao, yeah, school of the teaching of focus on the teaching of the Buddha. We call Tong Yao. And we have what we call My School. school that only focus on how the mind function. So many different schools. So it's, so we have to choose which school that's good for you.
Do you get to go to both schools? You have to choose before you enter one of the schools?
When you go to specialize, you know, just like for example, if you are in a 4-year or 2-year is more general. Mm-hmm. The first few years you have to study everything. And then it's move further, then you be selective. Specialize into different schools. So that so when you study all the general courses and then you feel this course is good for me, then you pay attention to that and then you study around that and you focus on that and yes, you move further and you specialize, you know, particular in that school. Yeah. But in Buddhism, when you penetrate in one school, you will penetrate all the school because that's where we have the teachings of interdependent co-arisings. Interconnectedness. It's not a separate, but because we divide it in categories so that it's easy for to focus. It's like when you enter one door, you open to experience all other doors. So the last many class we have been studying the path of the great beings who are devote their life to serve sentient beings. If you go on this path, we call the path of Bodhisattva, is the path that focus on sentient beings' benefit. In that focus, you already include you in there, all sentient beings, but you. You put the sentient beings as the priorities. You might lose some benefit, but it's okay. Then you focus on how to help sentient beings transform their own difficulties, their own afflictions. And that's where you generate the merit. That's why the first path is the path of accumulations. Generates the good deeds, good merit, positive deeds by doing, serving sentient beings. And in Buddhist, we say that sentient being is the field of merit. That's where you plant the seed. Plant the seed of awakening. For you know, for the farmer, they flower the rice fields, rice field, right? But in Buddhism, we call sentiment is the field of merits, that we do all the plowing, all the work with that sentiment. Without sentiment, we cannot be awake because we have no field to work. So sentiment is very important for us. For our liberations. So that's why all great sentient beings who are want to become enlightened, they have to descend in this world to work toward the enlightenment. So if you want to be enlightened, you have to go to this world. This is where you're able to, there's suffering, but there's the way out of suffering. So there is both. There is suffering, but there is way out of suffering. So that's why we can work here. But if you go to born into the realm of angel, then you only see the good things. Then it's hard to realize. So you only enjoy the pleasures. Whatever you think is calm. Then you don't have to work for it. But this is not the cause for enlightenment. So you have to be born here. So the future Buddha, Maitreya Buddha, had to come to this world to get his final realizations.
From last week, mm-hmm. This is something I've been thinking about all week.
Mm.
Because don't understand. Mm-hmm. You were talking about desire.
Mm-hmm.
And aspiration is different mm-hmm. than desire.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Desire is carry a connotations of a negative sense. You desire, for example, sensual pleasures. Mm. Mostly we call desire sensual pleasure, but aspiration is something higher. Aspirations for the goodness of other people. Aspirations to walk on the path so that you can rescue yourself out of suffering. That's kind of aspiration. And the desire, you can desire many, many, many things. But it carries some kind of a sense of affliction into it. For example, you desire, you have some sense of pleasure, but after pleasure, you see a lot of afflictions, a lot of suffering behind that. That's what it is. It's just like, for example, a hook with a bait. And that's what is a metaphor. And the fish, at first the fish desire to catch that bait and swallow it. And it has some sense of pleasure when the fish swallow the bait. But it's good hook up. After that, the fish become caught and suffering.
Where I'm having the problem mm-hmm. is thinking about me, for instance, I do real estate part-time,
mm-hmm.
and ideally I should dress nicer,
mm-hmm.
and I have to do all these things if mm-hmm. I'm going to have a really good business.
Yes.
So that's not in conflict with doing those things in order to reach goals to do a good job?
Yes, that's a good question. Here is your intention. What is your intention behind it? You see, in Buddhism we focus, what causes suffering is your intention behind it, behind what you want to do. I can dress, you know, if my intention is to dress good, and expose myself so that I can get a hook in it, and so I can hook. Then it's a bad intention behind already, you see. And so if you was to, you know, if to you dress good, you know, to make a profession, it's okay. You know, you have to dress in a proper way. It doesn't mean that you have to be attraction or anything, but in a proper way. You know, you can dress good, but in a proper way. You know, you don't provoke any desire for anybody. You see, but we dress good, but you want to provoke the desire from attract some some girl, some guy, whatever, are the same thing. See, you have the hook behind. You want to hook some more things. You see, that's our intention. So that's behind what causes suffering. You know, you can dress, you know, with full sleeve, good, look good, you know, properly, you know, your manner is good, you know. And that's the beauty. People can come to you in different way. You see that you or this guy is very, this lady or this man is very proper, you know, dressed appropriately, professionally in her or her his own profession. So he know what he's doing or he sees what he's doing. You know? So it's okay, you know. Bodhisattva can dress beautifully and walk into the world and do good work, you know. And monk, we dress to put on robe, it look very fancy too, you know, but that's kind of robe is to provoke some kind of spiritual, you know, spiritual attraction. So people come and see that not anything that worldly attraction, but just only spiritual provocation. This is a good question. Mm-hmm. You can see that what you learn is not conflict with your daily life is. You know, sometimes we learn but we don't get a clear understanding that we have a conflict. It is how can I apply this into my daily life so that I can progress on my practice? That's a conflict. You see? So you have to see clearly so that your spiritual and your life can go in accordingly. And so you once you feel comfortable in your own space, then you can succeed at your practice, but at the same time you can succeed at your work, because you don't have the conflict. And there's people, they have conflict, their spiritual practice and their work practice. They, for example, if you take the five training, then I say, how can I bring this into, a lot of people have conflict into this five training. How can I make my life successfully up by taking the five training? Because you see, like, not killing. How can I make that in my life so I don't kill, but at the same time I can have a peaceful life? And not stealing. How can I work without stealing? You know, if you work in a big corporations, if you don't do it properly, you can be steal people's life and steal people's money by many different ways. You see, so that's the conflict. And how can I have a family without, you know, violating the sexual misconduct? See, so you have to somehow that you, that's why, that's what is the, this is a good question for this one. Come to this one. So that's, I don't know, but it's going to call into what I'm going to plan to teach today. And so now I go to my topics to connect to that questions. So the topic that I want to share with you today, beside of on the path of Bodhisattva, because this will support you on the next several lessons to come. And even the lesson that we learned before, this is very good tools in Buddhism, in three kind of learnings. I suppose be to share with you before many other lessons, but sometimes it's coming up in my mind, in my meditation, and then I teach. So the three kind of learnings in Buddhism is it's very important for even the beginner or the long-term practitioner in on the spiritual path. The first one we call learning or listening. So the first tool that we in three ways of learning, the first thing is learning or listening. So you, when you come to the spiritual path, you have to listen to the teacher or learning, right? And and some basic learning so that you have the fundamental teachings so that you can move on. All right, that's three, so I can talk one time. The second one is reflecting or contemplating. Third kind of learnings is practicing or meditations or application. So these three basics, not basically, is not basics, learning tools is very crucial in the path of progressing toward spiritual path. So just like your question, you say that what I share with you is the learning, right? A learning or listening to me, to the sharing. Then you have to reflect on that. The more you reflect, contemplate, it's your part, and it's become your own character. It's become life. The more you contemplate on that. For example, you take a step and you say, thank you, or gratitude, for example, and that energy slowly somehow that merge in you or arise in you. And you feel some kind of easiness in you. You feel some kind of appreciation, whatever it is. For example, just drinking this tea, and I suddenly just close my eye. And I take a sip of the tea, and I just say thank you, or gratitude for that. And it made me feel somehow appreciation to the water, and at that moment, right at the present, and I contemplate, I see how much work and effort have been put into this cup of water. And I learned to appreciate that. And everything you do, you have that kind of contemplating, you become a different person. And you see the value of the tea, the water, and everything is there. And that's how the Buddha lived his life, moment by moment. But that is all the sentence or the sage of the saints. That's how they live their life. Because when you do that, you see the connections, you and between the objects and you. You see the connection. And then slowly you become oneness with that. Because you know that in yourself you have the water, the blood there in you. You see the water and the blood somehow have a connection. And that's why we become unity. You become unity with the universe. And that's how you make yourself alive. And that's all how you live your life deeply and happily, because of all of this that make you. It's not something that out there, but something that in you. And you reflect on that. You learn and you reflect on this, contemplate, and you observe. And the more you observe, the more it's become a clear reason. And that is how the process of transformation takes place. How is the transition? It's very vividly, and you see how that transformation takes place. And once you reflect, you contemplate, and you remove the affliction, the confusions, you see, because once your vision become clear, and you're able to see vividly, and you remove the boundaries or the afflictions between you and the objects. Between you and the object.
Could you speak about that a little more? Removing the afflictions between you and the object?
Because you see the connection between you and the object. That's why. You see? Because we say that once we have the afflictions or the confusion, because we see the objects and us is as two separate entity. You see, if I see the glass of water and myself is two separate entity, then there is some kind of blockage in it. Because I don't see it. You see, I don't see the connection. If I see the connection between the teeth and myself, then I remove that blockage. And then I have a union communication. Union communications. And that's why it's observing and contemplating. It's important. And you make that character, quality, become life in you. And you are one that with that quality. You are not separate, no longer the separate quality between you and the objects. unless you practice. That's why it's coming to practice, unless you put into applications. And then you put into application. You have a clear vision, and you work no longer in conflict. You see? Because you see that you have an intention behind that is not a pure intention, so it's blocked you. You see? The intention behind that. So I'll give another example like in the fourth edition of mindfulness of practice. Then we learn about our feeling. We listen to our feeling, right? Once you have a feeling, whether it's a pleasant feeling, or whether it's an unpleasant feeling, or whether it's a neutral feeling, then you learn from, you listen to your feeling, right? Hey, we can listen to our own feeling, right? And once we listen to our own feeling, and we observe our feelings, then we know that our feeling is in turbulence or emotional or not, right? Then what the next thing we do is we slow down when we do that, and then we have a clear vision. Then what should we do if we have an afflictive emotion, for example, in ourselves? Then we have learned that, we have feel that, we have observed that. And then we slowly try to embrace, not to resist, but to embrace, to let it, the feeling, be it is in yourself. And you learn. And that's how you generate your insight about the feeling. The feeling of the feeling. You have the insights about the feeling. That's where you, and then you know how to work with your feeling skillfully. Then you don't create more turbulence in yourself. For example, you can take a walk and at the same time, so you can expose yourself to the nature, and then the nature's can embrace, help you to embrace your feeling, because sometimes you have a very strong emotions, strong feelings, then it's overtake you. And that's why many teenagers, they have that, and they don't know what to do. And they act, and that's why they do many destructive. If we don't practice, we don't listen to our feeling, we don't observe. And that's why we do many destructive. We create many destructive feelings there for us. Because we're overwhelmed by that. But as the practice, you know, we listen to our feeling. We respect our feeling. We observe it. Our feeling is like our own baby. You see? It's our own baby. If you respect it, it will respect you. You see? You respect your feeling. And then the way that we practice, the way that we meditate on it, when we meditate, then our vision about our feeling become clear. And then we know how to embrace our feeling. We can little by our feelings. Hmm? Our baby, so little by part. And then we can invest, reflecting is like investing to investigate. Can look deeply into that feelings, investigate our feelings. And the more you look deeply in your feeling, investigate that feeling, and the more you find the way out how to tender that, how to care, take care of that feeling. Sometimes we don't know how to take care of our feelings. And if we don't learn, then we don't know how to take care of our feelings. We have to learn how to take care of feeling. It's the same thing, we learn how to take care of body. If we have this, we listen to our body, you know. Sometimes you eat the food, that the body don't take it. And the body react, and it creates some kind of pain and some kind of noise in your stomach, for example, right? And then that means you listen to that. You say that my body don't take it. As an example, I went to Wichita, and I normally don't drink coffee. And one of my friends offered me a big cup of coffee, a strong coffee. I just take one sip, and my heart is pumping fast. And I stop right away. I listen to my heart. I listen to my body. If I was to because of pleasing my friend and drink the coffee, and I will not pray for the whole day, I will ruin my day. If I don't listen to my body, my heart, because I know that my heart couldn't take it, just for one sip, and after that my body react right away, and I say sorry that my body couldn't take it. I listen carefully to my body. Just first the thing in the morning before I have a ceremony, before I have all the talk and that kind of stuff. And if I take that coffee to please my friend, and then my day is ruined. Because I practice and say, I sit there with my friend, a group of my friends, and we talk and we drink tea, and my friend say that, oh, when they offer everybody in the table drink coffee, and I try to please them at the first moment. I say, okay, I try. But the first sip, and then my body says no. I can't take it. It's too strong for me. See, and then I contemplate, reflect on that, and I learn a lot from my body. So that's the teaching. Is these two things is very practical. If you take it and you do it and you practice, it's helped you through our walk this path of life.
Another question I have is, when you're with someone, say a friend or a child or something, a family member, and they are unfamiliar with mindfulness,
mm-hmm.
and things like that, and you want to, say, have tea with them,
mm-hmm.
how do you do that without acting like, okay, this is how you do it. You do this now. You just, you know, don't drink your tea so fast. Mm-hmm. Slow down. Just relax. How do you do it without sounding like
you are a practitioner.
Yeah, like...
Okay.
How do you invite people
mm-hmm.
to slow down
mm-hmm.
and try to be mindful without preaching it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. That's a very good question, so that people don't allergic with you. Yes.
Because they're going to go, gee, why are you going so slow? You're drinking your tea so funny.
that's really a good question. You know, when you practice, you have to... The more you practice, the more you should be harmonized with people and go along with people well. If you are skillfully, that means you are penetrate the practice. And wherever you go with people, but you don't let them take you. You don't let them carry you. But people don't let you. You can do it. Everybody have their own way of opportunities, for example. And you can do it in your way mindfully, and they could learn from you. You know, they just observe that by observing here, mm-hmm. and observing and learn. That's how children learn too. Mm-hmm. Children observe parents very much. What you do, you influence your children. Whatever you do, sometimes I don't teach you, but you can learn from me. Or you don't teach me, but I learn from you. Because the actions that you take that carry out something that's beautiful and something that very vibrant. And I observe, I say, oh, what he does is look beautiful and very calm. And I don't say it, but I put it in my mind. The image is already in my mind. And we all experience this from our parents. You learn from your parents that if some sometimes your parents don't think that's very skillfully, and you learn it, and you carry it out through your life. So we call body teachings, teng yao, body teachings. The way that you learn is you teach. But the way that you do the work is the way that you teach. So for example, when we go to for sitting, and you just show me where I sit relaxingly and straight, you say that, oh, Thai sit is very straight and very relaxed. So I should follow that. That's one way of teaching. So when instead of you sitting like this, for example, forward or backward, and you look at me, and if I was to a skill, I would practice right, and then I sit straight, relax. Then you look, and you learn. And just the same thing, your friend, you don't have to teach them, but when you do it beautifully, you will influence them. If you live your life beautifully, that's the way you teach. That's the way you share. You don't teach, but you share with people the way that you live. And we all have some image in our life that we learn from people that they do things only without saying that I teach you this or that. So that's the way. And you live harmony. And sometimes people can walk, and you can walk fast, but because some people, they walk fast without mindfulness, but you can walk fast with mindfulness. You see? You can run, you say, running mindfulness running. Yes? But you can be run without mindfulness. You see? You let mindfulness say you are paying attention to the way you walk, pay attention to your body, what is going on to your body while you run. See? But while you run, if you don't practice, while you run but you don't practice, you just let body do whatever it is. It can be in a turbulence, it can be a strong emotion when you run, right? The same thing. But here you pay careful attention, bear attention, say that, oh, my body is kind of itching or whatever that is. And while you run, you see? That's the difference. But nobody knows that you are practicing. You can walk fast. Same thing. So you know that you are practicing. You know that you have your awareness there while you do all these things. That's the difference. And your products, the product is different. It's different. Okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So these three, listening or learning or reflecting, contemplating, practicing, meditation, yeah. So when you do this, you don't expect the people outside to change. But you see yourself change. Okay, so to help me to elaborate, make this point clear, can you read the story? This is Don't Change the World, the title. Mm-hmm. Don't Change the World. Let allow some.
Don't change the world. Once upon a time, there was a king who ruled a prosperous country. One day he went for a trip to some distant areas of his country. When he was back to his palace, he complained that his feet were very painful because it was the first time that he went for such a long trip, and the road that he went through was very rough and stony. He then ordered his people to cover every road of the entire country with leather. Definitely, this would need thousands. Of cow's skin and would cost a huge amount of money. Then one of his wise servants dared himself to tell the king, "Why do you have to spend that unnecessary amount of money? Why don't you just cut a little piece of leather to cover your feet?" The king was surprised, but he later agreed to his suggestion to make a shoe for himself. This is actually a valuable lesson of life in this story. To make this world a happy place to live, you better change yourself, your heart,
and not the world.
Okay, that's a story to demonstrate my point.
That's good. Nice.
So when we practice, we don't expect other people to change, or the world to change. You see, it's like you can see this through the life of the Buddha. And whenever I say something, I have to reflect back to the life of the Buddha and see, you know, the Indian war, three caste systems, all that kind of stuff. And he become enlightened. And he don't expect, he have the intentions, the love, and to share his teachings so that people can change themselves. But he don't expect the world to change.
You're exploding.
You're exploding.
Sorry.
See, the two practitioners always to look inner, inward, to see what is changed in us, what is changed, what is transforming us. That's what you learn here. Listen, contemplate, and meditate. So you can experience the change in you. How can you change the world? You see? But you can influence the world. Right? You, the way that you live, the way that you share, the way you teach, so that you can help people to change themselves. That's what it means. To change themselves. Only people that can change their own, their themselves, nobody can change them. They, once they realize this, realize that changing is good to make themselves better, then they make the effort, the commitment to change themselves. I don't think my dad or my parents can change me. But unless I realize the path that I want to improve, I want to change, I want to make myself better. So I commit to do that, so I can change myself. And that's how I influence people, and the people come to me and I say, this is myself, for example. Not myself, but around is an example that I practice this, I contemplate this, I change myself, so you can do the same thing. So when the young people come to me, I don't change them, but I give them courage, I give them the guidance so that they can contemplate on that and change. So I prepare them, preparation, a course to change, the condition to change. Just like the king, you see, after he realized that, why do I have to make, you know, spend a lot of money or effort to the country?
Kill a lot of cows,
sacrifice a lot of cows, you know, just instead of just a little piece of leather cover my feet and I can walk everywhere comfortably. You change it. It's like that. And if you have this, you can care, you can go all over, you should still be a comfortable person. You see? This is when I read this story, I just, you know, contemplate and, you know, and see, and I say, you know. And then that's why sometimes we make unnecessary suffering for ourselves and for the world.
I should name the story How Shoes Were Invented.
I see.
Or the first four-wheel shoes.
So when you learn this, you go back to yourself and work with your own. You have all things to work with. Your body, your mind, your feelings, and everything's around you to work.
So does this fall into one of those schools that you were talking about?
This is for all school. For our school, whether you are Vinaya is the precept school. You have to listen to, you know, all the training and contemplate what can these trainings cannot. So sometimes if you don't have a clear vision, then training become a block that prevents you, you know, it's clear a lot of blockers in you. So you have to contemplate, so how can I make a connection? See, how can I make a connection? When you contemplate, you make a connection. Observe. Make a connection. The inner and the outer. Inner and outer. War. Inner war and outer war. Make a connection. So that you don't confuse yourself. You don't block yourself from the outer. This is the cup is outer war. Here is outer. Outside me. But when I see it penetrate my scenes, then I see that somehow that it also connects with my inner war. See? My body. My blood. The water that's in me. And you remove the blockers there. You have another question?
Yeah.
Good.
Sorry.
Good.
I've been thinking about this a lot. Because
I mean, you've been practicing.
I have a lot of. So, why it started is because I've been working on simplifying my life. And so I was thinking originally, okay, just get rid of most of your clothes, only have a few. And do this and do that. And originally where the problem came in for me many, many years ago when I was young is I felt guilty for being
given
an
away.
American. Because I was living in this good country, have all these things, and there's so many people in the world who don't have anything and who suffer. So I've had this conflict for many years about, well, don't have nice clothes, don't get a nice car, and all these things. And then when I'm doing real estate, every time they talk to us about trying to motivate us, think about the new car you can have, and the vacation, and the beautiful home. And I just go, oh, my God. But then, just this last week, I was thinking, I can't help anybody. In the condition that I'm in. I can't help anybody. I don't have, I mean, except for like smiles and things, but all these years I've kept myself from doing well because I felt guilty I shouldn't have things and desire, want things. I mean, there's people in there that look like they came out of a magazine, the way they dress and giant stones on their hands, you know. And it's like, why do you?
Because
you don't need all those things. To
see, here is your thinking, is blocking you.
Yeah.
Your thinking is not. You don't have a clear vision in your thinking. So you're thinking. That's why we have to have the right thinking in the first. The second on the Eightfold Path, right thinking, and right thinking is have to support by. The fundamental of that is have to have the right view. This doesn't being an American is a label, you see, or being in a Vietnamese is a label. You've been in this country, you've been this country can be called Vietnamese, a Vietnam country, right? Or this country can call French or Germany. So just a label to call it. So don't get caught into that label. And that's why you see you don't union. Your view is not union. It's not connected yet as the base of right thinking or right view. So that's why we study, we contemplate, we reflect, so that we can remove all this. Remove all these layers. We call wrong view. Either wrong view or upside down view in Buddhism. Upside down view. Upside down. Sometimes our view is like upside down. You see? Upside down. So being an American, there's nothing wrong with that. But the way it's wrong because our thinking is wrong. We are caught in our wrong thinking. You see, So you say you expect yourself being an American have to be this and have to be that, right? Or being a Vietnamese have to be in a Vietnam, have to be this, a Vietnamese person have to be this. And that's way of thinking cut us and make us pain, suffering, you see? And that is blocking us to come together. Blocking us to come together. And we always caught in form. In form. Hình tướng is called we have a preconception of what it is. See, I have. They say that the seeds of transformation lie in seeing our own reality more clearly without preconceptions and judgments. Contemplate and see. So it's have to transform all this layers of upside down thinking, wrong thinking. Then that's why we have this here, contemplate. So when we have, once we have a vivid thinking, a right view about life. And right view and right thinking is here, is the connections, the connectedness of all things. Connectedness of all things. So when you practice, you can contemplate, you can see where you get stuck, where you get caught. It's okay. That's I know that you are being contemplated by that practice. And then you see that, and slowly you, the more you let your mind rest, and you see, you will see the way out. How you get out of that, get out of that trap. And then that's when you do that, and that's what we call liberation. Partial liberations, not wholly partial. We call, in Vietnamese, we call phần giác, part of liberations. You liberate yourself part, little by little. Partial liberations. And day by day, you become, you let yourself, let all of this trash go, and you become more lighter, your reason become more clear. And that's the difference, you know? We all have, whether there is sense or not sense, the same human physical body. But the way they did things, the way they approach things, different. The way they react to things, different. Somebody comes, smash you on your face, the sense react differently. But the people who are conscious, this act differently. And the people who are in ignorance, the people who are in aggressive, react differently. That's the difference, right? Whether we generate more suffering or whether we generate less suffering, have less suffering. The cost of suffering is less. So you're on the path, you are up, you have more light or vision or more clear insight, then you have less, you prepare yourself, less cost of suffering, the cost of suffering. But the people who are not practitioner, they generate more cost for the suffering. The same situation, either you are generate less cost of suffering or you are generate more cost of suffering. That's the difference in our practice. You can have your family, but your family can be is a condition for you to generate less cost suffering. But at the same time, your family can be a cause for your more suffering. It depends how you approach, how you view, how you're thinking. Any more questions or any? Three kind of learning. So that's what we call three kinds of learnings in
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is not about that, but
this will relate.
When we say the chants, in one place in the chant, it says something about our fourfold communities.
Mm-hmm.
Would you talk about that a little bit?
Okay, the fourfold community is the first one is lay female friends. The second one is lay male friends.
Okay.
And the third one is nunk.
What is that?
Nun.
Is
that?
No. Nun like you, like a monk?
Yeah. Nun is a female nun. Female nun.
Female monk.
So what are they again? Lay female?
Lay female and lay male.
Okay.
And nun. And monk.
Oh, okay.
We call fourfold communities.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So this book have many different stories. So each time I will share you, it's called Spiritual Diet.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun story, and you know, and many from different religion story, but it's all spiritual story. So like normally in we call fourfold community is like lay female friends and lay male friends is also very much interrelate with nun and monk. We call tứ chúng. They support each other in the practice. And see the lay communities, they work and they bring material support, and the responsibility of the monk and nun is to share with the lay communities is this all the teachings. That's our responsibility. Contemplate and teach in a way that so that help the lay communities to to be live in peacefully, and you know, very important there. By the time of the Buddha, but even here today, nowadays today, see all the monks, they don't work, but they practice and they write books and they teach. That's their response, and to spread the seeds of wisdom, the seed of love, and all that kind of stuff. And the lay communities, they all work, and so that we teach them in a way that they can have time for the family and have time for the practice and see, and make that fit the teachings fit for them. So both have to be very much interrelated, and somehow.
So it's not a hierarchy.
I don't think so. Yeah, you know, each have different responsibility.
Okay.
You
and
see,
they work together.
Respond. And many lay friends, they can choose to, if they have the capability, and they devote their life in the areas of teaching and practice, and they also can choose too. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not a hierarchy or anything. You see, Paul?
I was wondering, when you're reflecting or contemplating, is there any kind of like guidelines or questions you ask yourself so that you know if you're having right view or right thought, or if you're really off track?
You're off track when your mind is wandering, you know, it's, you know, this burden to many places, that means you're off track. And disperse. But once your mind is you contemplating, you bring an object to say, for example, one question, say, what I'm doing here? Or how long? Reflecting on your life, there's what kind of quality life I have. And many teachings, all the teachings of the Buddha is meant to you to contemplate and to develop your qualities. For example, the quality of love, the quality of wisdom, the quality of choice, all that is quality. So each time you work with one, all the teachings on impermanent, for example, you say, oh, I have a healthy body now. Where is that forever? See, that's the kind of things that you work on. I have a feeble condition now, but that isn't that feeble condition will last forever. It's not going to last forever. So what should I do? Is to use the time that you're still healthy, the time that you have a feeble condition, to prepare for whatever challenge come. So that's kind of things we should work on our meditations.
Mm-hmm. Along the same lines, that Paul is saying, it seems like, I like that you said that connected, that learning to take care of our feelings is like learning to take care of our body. And it seems like there's so much more information about how to take care of our body.
Mm-hmm.
The pyramid, mm-hmm. and we can go to the doctor, and we understand all the things that work. But it feels like it's less of a map in terms of how to take care of our feelings.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't these like, okay, what can I ask myself mm-hmm. when this feeling comes up? And I'm realizing how I felt like the American guilt thing that you brought up, Nicole, earlier. About I have also white guilt, especially after Martin Luther King Day, and teaching my kids, and I'm feeling all guilty, and we're reading about slavery, and I'm like, oh my God, and I complain about my life, and yet, there are people in the past who suffered so much more, there are people today who suffer so much more. Why do I even complain at all?
Mm-hmm.
And then I just get all like. inside, and then I blow up my kids, and I'm like, oh, now
that worked.
and you know, if I would have like said, okay, where's the what do I do with this guilt? Where do I go with that
mm-hmm.
feeling? And I love how the story that Tai tells about the Vietnam vet who had killed many children.
Mm-hmm.
when he was in Vietnam, and how he carried that guilt with him for years and years and years. And that when he met with Tai and told him this, and Tai said, okay, yes, that was something bad, but what do you do now? What do we do now? And so that's one guideline for me, is sort of
mm-hmm.
I can't forget the past, mm-hmm. but what do I do now to help the children of Vietnam? Or what do I do now to help to make race relations better.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of
yeah, that's kind of contemplating to when you work with. You know, we have some past wrongdoing, but the lesson is not to be guilt, to feel guilt, but to learn how do we learn the lessons mm-hmm. to make ourselves a better person. You see. So in American, our English Western friends, we have a lot of guilt about many other things. But for myself, I think, how do I learn the lesson from that and make myself a better person? Is that a better, different word to say so that you don't feel guilt? How do I improve myself? Right. We all make mistakes somehow, more or less, on our path. But don't let that mistakes drown you. But learn from that and walk and wet up and walk. That's the important lessons. You know, the Buddha before he became Buddha, he making mistakes too. You see, when he was very deep 18 realm of hell, that's why he making mistakes. When he go down there, 18 realm, the hell of blood and kind of stuff, and he see. And from seeing the suffering of all the people in the hell realm, and then he said he make a promise. They say, can I do all this suffering so that all these people in this hell can liberate? And suddenly, and then after he make that vow, and he liberate himself. You see, this is one of the story before he become a Buddha. He was in very deep hell. he make a mistake. But he learned to get, he generate a good cause for him too. And from there, he just move up, move up the ladder, become a Buddha. He don't let the mistake caught him. Glenn?
Yeah, I just wanted to share that I did come up with a way to work with my difficult emotions, which can be very overwhelming for me at times. It goes back to the household I grew up in. It was World War III. And I was the youngest. And so everybody's garbage trickled down to me. And I had no place to put it. So I just stuffed it all. And when I was 19, I got very sick as a result of it. And what I've... And through the years, I really struggled until I found this practice because I didn't know what to do with all this anger and judgment and all of it. And when I started doing this practice, I realized, wait a minute, this doesn't all belong to me. It was put on me by the big people in my life. And so I started looking every time my fear comes up, which it still does, and I guess it'll probably come up for the rest of my life. I'm going to be dealing with it on some level. It's gotten better, but it still comes up at times. And I'll take it. I'll take that emotion, and I'll just, sometimes they come up in the middle of my meditation. Sometimes they come up, I'll wake up in the middle of the night with it. Sometimes, all of a sudden, in the middle of the day, it just slaps me in the face, and I'm sitting there going, okay, where'd this come from? What am I doing? What happened in the middle of the night? Of course, I have no answers. I just woke up with this feeling of intense fear, and I'm learning to look at it and ask myself what's under it and what's on, you know, and it keeps going. I keep peeling off layers. I go deeper and deeper and deeper, and you know, is it something that my father used to do when I was a kid? Is it something that my mother did? Is it something that my sister or my brother or my grandparents or, you know, whoever? Where did this... So I just keep looking at it, and the more I look at it, the less power it has over me. And, you know, sometimes in the middle of a meditation, I have to redirect what I'm doing because I can't ignore it. It's too strong. And I'll look at it, and then I'll go back to, you know, my meditation as it was when the whole thing, when the emotion came up. I find that that's been helpful. It's not perfect, but it helps. And I really am very grateful that I found this path when I did, because it's really made a big difference for me.
Thank you, Len.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for sharing your practice. You have another question?
No.
Okay.
Just thinking, thank you.
Okay, so thank you for sharing your practice. I think each of us will... we're learning and we're reflecting, we'll come up some practice for ourselves. There is an offer, there is guideline offer, but once we practice, have some insights, so we will come up with some of the practice that fit for it. That's where the insight is generated. So the practice is not a fix, you know, there is a guideline, there is an offering guideline for us, but also there is an open door that we can come up with something that work for us. This is a life insight. You make your insight alive, and that's why in we are creative. In Buddhism, upaya, skillful means, is very important in the practice. You know, all the teaching of the Buddha is the guideline. It's not something fixed for us to. So that's why it's rich which makes it creative in our practice. So if you practice and you come up with some way that you think that bring you some peace, bring yourself, then that is good, you know. And continue working, that means you are been contemplating, you are working with your own mental formations. This mental formation can be good mental formation and something, negative mental formation also. But so all we accept and work with that. Nothing is to reject in Buddhism. Nothing is to resist, but everything is embrace and work and transform. So sometimes I call myself a transformer. Mm-hmm. One day I was in my meditation and I said, oh, you are good at transformer. Because one day I think I have some strong emotion coming up. And so I just sit. So I sit and work with it. And I, after my meditation, I feel at peace with myself. And I said, oh, you are a good transformer. Yeah, we are a transformer. We have to be a transformer in our life. And that's why we generate insight. So the more you practice, the more you secret the insight. Secret. Secret. Yeah. It's not secrecy, but secret. You... Small insights leaking out, it's generous. I call it secret. Yeah, secret. Your insight and your love, whatever that is. Tiết ra, thực tập, càng thực tập thì mình phải tiết ra những cái tuệ giác. You secret the insight. It's important to know to do that every day. And secret a little bit of insight and love and kindness for yourself. And for the people around. That's the only way you can nourish yourself. Maybe. So thank you. So we will stop here and to do our meditations, to put our listening, reflecting, and observing into applications. So I'll invite Teresa up here so that we can conclude the talk here. Thank you for your listening.